not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network.
Cool. Across every time zone covering both hemispheres, it's time for another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. A growing number of people believe that Earth's history has been influenced by celestial beings. I think so myself, and in my humble opinion, one gentleman who knows probably more about this than anyone is our guest of honor every show. It's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
How's life in paradise this week?
It's beautiful in comparison to the frozen Europe.
Yeah, now, gee, I consider myself a news junkie, and I guess I completely missed that. We were talking off air earlier, folks, right before going on the show, about the cold spell in Europe. Fill me in.
Well, you know, it's not, you know, concerning the United States, and weather apparently is not a big piece of news. You know, we have a lot of problems globally and things that concern people's pocketbooks and the terror and fear that it may cause. But actually, the weather actually can cause global problems, even if it is, you know, not affecting the United States as much as in years past. But I remember talking about the jet stream, you know, and it, if it ever moves down low, then it'll have really super cool, cold weather because the jet stream itself is acting up. And what powers the jet stream and how it works, it's kind of a mystery to me. I don't really understand its function that well, although many, many things could be combining to have its behavior acting in a way that is, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of people are, you know, stuck in frozen areas, and Great River Danube's frozen, and a tremendous amount of things are affecting people in Europe. People have had so much snow that they're literally, instead of shoveling snow to get to their home, they tunnel through snow to get to their home because their home is literally completely buried, and they're under, you know, might as well tunnel through it versus digging it out. So they're literally tunneling through some areas. So it all moves in conjunction with the type of problems that were pointed out by our celestial friends, one of them being Tan. Tan warned that the problem with the world today in many areas is that it's moved toward continually ignoring the dangers in the nuclear reactors and the energy and the power grids. We're eventually going to be tested, and there would be some accidents that would happen, and he spoke about this over a decade ago, and let us know in one form or another that these things are coming. Now, when they're beginning to happen, it's kind of troubling to me because this seems to be just the beginning of it, and that's you know, it's not the entire world, but like you say, it's almost as if the United States news media wants to cover it up, or the powers that be that run it don't think it's some worthy news to throw in there, but it indeed is. It's causing a lot of trouble as far as just weather, in terms of perhaps more climactic changes.
Well, hasn't certain weather events throughout history played enormous pivotal events? I'm thinking of, wasn't it the Spanish Armada that was completely wiped out in a single storm? It took Spain's power off the table as a world power in one event, and it makes you wonder if it's rumored that through the HAARP system we can alter weather. Gee, I wonder what the Celestials, if they have that technology. Of course they do. Of course they do. And boy, do you think, Michael, that the Celestials have ever used weather, or any other alien race that maybe for good or bad, has ever actually used weather as a weapon?
Well, as a weapon, yes. One of the best documented cases of weather being used as a weapon, and also at the same time being used as a tool of selective protection, is the biblical account of the crossing of the Red Sea, when a strong wind came out and just simply blew the shallow part of the sea open. And this combination, perhaps with other things, did in fact give it credence. If someone our modern historians are beginning to feel that there are areas in which that could have happened if the wind was strong enough, and of course such a thing was used as a type of weapon, simply letting it go, like pulling the tree branch back until the person that's running after you just let it go and whack him in the face as he runs after you. But it's a kind of impression. You just triggered something in my mind as you began to talk about HAARP. One of the things we were talking about is if the jet stream moves low, and that's how we get a lot of our cold weather, is the jet stream actually affecting it, and not necessarily just cold weather, cold fronts moving in. It's actually the jet stream itself, which is extremely cold. And HAARP works with the troposphere. Actually, right at the border between the ionosphere and the troposphere, and uses a type of focused phased energy that can heat the air mass. And, if you wanted to push it, you could actually direct it if you knew places where it would be critical enough to turn such a natural forming energy, just simply moving it. I know that in my work with the Celestials, they have followed my wishes, essentially like prayers, you might say, in literally moving hurricanes, because a hurricane on the move is actually easier to move than perhaps some other force like a grand or a great flood or a tsunami. But something like the jet stream moving down and causing trouble. Right now, in Europe, the kind of trouble is not just cold. It's people are dying. It's always the poor old people that ran out of fuel, that get frozen in their homes. And the concept has actually gone to the point where they think that if anyone turns off heating fuel, that such a massive amount of deaths could be accounted for by those that require the fuel to heat their homes at a time when they don't think they need to, they didn't plan to.
Well, if we know that some aliens who visit this planet are not always friendly, you know, have there been things throughout history that we don't realize were actually angry, mean aliens using weather to disguise their actions?
Well, yes, that idea is quite, you know, phenomenal, but it takes a type of really concerted effort to create something like this. Given the fact that the fallen ones, the ones who have actually been displaced, actually in the structure of heaven, and essentially, when I was with the Celestials, they did acknowledge that fact, just because of the very fact that the system that we are functioning in is called Satania. They acknowledged that there was trouble. But they also said that has been put down, and yet there could be some renegades out there trying to push through this particular year events that could turn things into their favor, being the world essentially becoming unified in terms of a one world power, a sovereign world, standing in the face of unwilling to give up its sovereignty. But apparently, you know, this seems like a weak tool if it was to be used in that way, because of the fact that there are so many forces under stress right now. And these forces also include, besides the political structure, you know, the actual technology that we use to keep our civilization functioning, and indeed something as simple as keeping people warm. But also with that goes that food supplies will get cut back because it can't be run through to areas, or can be flown in even. And these things are already happening right now. They're happened or happening. The pressures upon it are happening as the European cold freeze is going to be a real thing to look at as far as having a, like you say, a real change in how the government or the world is operated.
Well, gee, it's my humble opinion that the oil industry's deliberately kept the number of refineries very small, therefore creating a bottleneck, therefore, again, controlling the price of refined fuels. A well-placed tsunami or hurricane or earthquake could wipe out, you know, we do seem to have a concentration of those in certain parts of the world. You knock out five or six refineries, the price of gas is $13 a gallon, heating oil is $20 a gallon, and the entire world economy collapses.
Well, yeah, that would be bad, you know, a very terrible scenario, even for the oil companies. But more like a terrible reset in terms of how we've managed in terms of our world, and our actually playing certain. I never ever really, you know, believed in the concept of global warming totally. I knew that there was warming, and I knew that there is going to be some problems with it. But I also looked at other events worldwide and did notice that it may not necessarily be just the idea of global warming, but more climactic change, sudden. And this is something that was warned about. Tan himself was actually warning us to look at the problem and try to do something instead of having, you know, systems that will be tested to the brink right now, the United States is going through a period where they can actually, you know, prepare for something like this. And having had the prior years' tragedy, and you know, moved over to Europe, it's almost like there's a warning to the world in terms of keep getting their technology in order, getting their power grids in order, getting their way of doing things in order, the paradigm of energy and energy usage and economy and flow, because energy usage is one of the things that really has been controlling the world in terms of how it functions. And having currency tied so closely with energy has, you know, been showing its head. But then suddenly the disengagement and then outright fraud that has gone into the currency system, doesn't match very well with perhaps even our intent, our warnings to move to more sustainable systems that are, and even, you know, the concept of moving people off-grid or having people have the mentality to move off-grid, at least to work it out through various trials like this. So I think it's a warning, a strong warning coming through.
Well, folks, we're not far from December 21st, 2012. I forgot to look on my calendar and figure out exactly how many days we have left. What if something came along? Something that made it irrefutable. Like, let's say tomorrow NASA announces, guess what? There's this big object flying at us coming in from the outer space, and it's big and it's dark and it's headed this way. What if the world knew it was going to end on December 21st of this year? Now, the RAND Corporation would say, we're all going to run amok in the streets and society will collapse and we'll all be dead before then. I don't know if that's the case. What do you think would happen?
Well, I think what would happen is that if people's lives were given a termination time, and most everyone does have that ultimately, but never think about it, but having it all at the same time would indeed change people's perspective on how they live their lives. And many would realize that the supposed gamble, the gamble that there is life after death and that there will be a way of judgment on your behavior, which would assure whether you would want to have you would live a, you know, supposedly wonderful afterlife. People would arrange their lives differently and would behave differently, and those that would become more base or animal in terms of living life before it all ends, because that's all you have, would seem to fizzle out. It would burn out, and there would be, what would be left would be people who, whether it's now or the time ahead, they would try to behave themselves in a way that is a higher order, not so base or animal. And surprisingly, things like this do come about where such tragedy appears to be inevitable, and people's behavior is as terrible as you might think. It's live until that time comes. Not throw in the towel and totally change the way you live to be just a total hedonistic individual looking for supposedly what would reward you in this short life, because then they know it. What is it? There's going to be masses of people who would understand. Things like that would be a windfall for many of the faiths around the world, as people who would return to to try to discover if there is any truth in all of what was spoken about life after death, about heaven, and about hell, perhaps, you know, the warning of hell, these kinds of things. So, yeah, I think that it wouldn't absolutely be like people all running around mad, such as, let's say, something so tragic and unexpected as the fall of the Twin Towers, being underneath and seeing people run because it was collapsing and all of that stuff moving. That was human beings. And even at times like that, people behaved themselves with outstanding noble character, you know, not just running crazy, stomping all over everybody and running all over and finding people who got stomped upon. That wasn't really the case.
Well, certainly society would end as we know it. It would be very difficult to motivate people to go to work at jobs they already find meaningless and pointless if they knew that there was really no much point in it. So I guess if those that the powers that be do know something horrific is going to happen, I doubt we will hear it from any government source.
Yeah, and it's an example of that would be, as you said today, in reference to this European freeze, and its severity, is that it's not newsworthy. So, it's something that could be delayed as far as the information coming about. Only if you look for it, if you're told to take a look at it, you know, and. This is exactly what happened to me, as I just felt that, you know, talk about what happened to the push on the warning on the jet stream. What did it do? And, you know, it's been doing that, but not over the United States. So the United States is showing its ignorance to something else going, and this particular case being, you know, extreme cold in Europe and the many problems that it have, and being basically held in a cocoon of looking at other events and other things that are more newsworthy, I guess.
Yeah, there's always American Idol anyway, right?
Yeah.
My friends have my written permission to kill me if I ever watch an episode of American Idol.
Yeah.
I wanted to back up just briefly to the point you made before about the difference between global warming and climate change, and that there is some emerging evidence. Of course, there's been a lot of evidence around for decades that they found animals frozen in deep ice that seem to still have, you know, vegetation in their stomach. This happened instantaneously. And maybe I should ask the question this way. What would happen, or what would have to happen to our atmosphere to open up and let some of that super cold air? My understanding, the temperature outside of our atmosphere, you know, out in open space above the Earth is about 250 below zero. Is that right?
Yeah.
Fahrenheit? Well, in other words, so if something could come by and, you know, imagine the Earth's atmosphere like a balloon, if something could come by and depress that atmosphere, push that atmosphere down just temporarily, it would bring 250 degree below zero air, or that temperature, to the ground, you know, even for just a minute or two, you would flash freeze everything, right?
Absolutely. It'll be just an absolute flash freeze.
I mean, as quick as you could snap your fingers, everything would be rock solid. I mean, this would happen. Now, I don't know if this has ever happened, but keep that in mind for just a moment. A couple programs I've been watching on the Discovery or History or one of those other science channels showed men digging at the bottom of a glacier somewhere in South America, in mountains in South America, and they noticed that under the ice was grass and flowers and plants. And they were deducing that this stuff shouldn't be there. That if this was such a cold environment for this glacier to form, you know, a mile deep, then this must have been an arid, dry, cold place where no plants would have been growing in the first place, yet there they are. So, again, that leads to, whether it's a right conclusion or not, that that area was another place where one day it was beautiful summer and the next day it's like Antarctica. So maybe there is something that happens that changes weather overnight.
Well, let's look at the forces that perhaps could be attributed to making this cold snap possible. And some people say heart could have that kind of power. And it, if you're looking at that type of energy and moving streams of wind lower and things like that, perhaps has some effect. But to move that cold layer down that low, would it probably involve a perhaps a comet, something that would serve as a glancing blow, perhaps. And in such a case, it's already been theorized and proposed in one of my earlier points of being, you know, pressured and pointed into after my return to, you know, essentially planet Earth, I was led very quickly to become fully understanding of the faith in, around the world, and then in particular became a Christian, and quickly became somehow very recognized as having more understanding and authority in what I was talking about than anybody, that any ordinary person. And along with that pressure, I was also guided to understand one Immanuel Velikovsky, Worlds in Collision, the concept of sudden change, the concept of the glancing blow of a comet that has changed things. And another thing that is also happening that was pointed out at the time of my reading of Velikovsky, which came very short, within months of my return to planet Earth, as I was they told me I was going to be continue to be taught many things besides, you know, about other things that I played with, lasers and Tesla coils and various types of modern technology. I was also shown concepts of sudden climatic change and sudden change through extraterrestrial sources like a comet that could do just what you're talking about. And also what is strange was the sounding of these, the trumpet of God, the supposed trumpet of God, and how they were involved in the ancient histories in announcing or in their recollection of these sudden climatic changes, sudden changes that caused a lot of problems. And their society was just basically not so technological. It could essentially heal back, but In our case, it would be a much bigger, harder trial if it gets hit in a large expensive area. But apparently, it looks as if if the United States and Europe together had the same weather experience, the whole northern hemisphere, it would be pretty dramatic. It would leave the southern hemisphere as being the breadbasket of the world. Presently, we're still able to continue supplying much of the need around the entire world, around the entire planet. However, we may in fact be headed toward more sudden changes, because these kinds of weather are being heralded by other sounds, actual sounds that are being heard throughout the world, which could mean that there's an more powerful, perhaps like a Planet X or near Nibiru that may be moving around, but we don't know exactly where to perhaps or when to focus our instruments or and actually make good sight of it. There have been many observed anomalies in terms of seeing, you know, the second sun and things like that for Nibiru, but these can be attributed to type of optical splitting using a type of anomalous inversion characteristic of dense and thin layers and actually splitting the actual image into two and then sending both actually through. But there are other things that if what is observed is absolutely true, is what Nancy Leader has been always talking about, we would see the kinds of events that are being spoken of right now and are being recorded by ordinary people right now. And then adding them together would actually give us a much stronger idea that they could become a real, perhaps, reset. I always, I'm very hesitant to say a destruction of our planet, because I was told it wasn't going to happen, but a reset to society.
Well, you can't help seeing the increased number of television shows on the Discovery Channel, the Science Channel, History Channels, the Ancient Aliens, the UFO programs, the Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce. It seems, okay, yes, with the hype from 2012, it makes sense. TV executives are trying to capitalize advertising dollars on this whole thing. But also, I think it serves another purpose as conditioning Americans, because remember, Americans are some of the stupidest people on the planet. And I say that partly in jest and partly not. One of the fascinating programs I saw recently on one of those channels disclosed about the Russian programs and how they are, for a while, they were much more wide open about these types of things. And that they were shooting at them. Didn't Bob Lazar say he saw at Area 51 aircraft with holes in them? So if that's, are we fighting with these people? Are the Russians shooting these down? Are we shooting these down? I'm sorry to get off on that tangent, but let me ask you that directly. Do we have governments out there shooting down UFOs?
I believe there was some interaction going on, definitely, with some UFOs and our own insecurity as far as in the Cold War. And that particular time, you know, people were very trigger happy. And indeed, I was able to stand next to some of these. Not all of them are alike. And there are many different levels of technology. But I would say some of them look, you know, it looks like they're pretty much a thing, you know, a tin can, you might say. It seemed to look like they were not necessarily nuts and bolts construct, but actually different from what I was looking at, let's say, when the craft or the ship was on and actually emanating light. When they'll say they were just, there was one that was I was looking at that seemed to be just parked, you know, basically turned off, and it looked like it could get whacked pretty hard by a solid object and perhaps even get dented or something. But that it could be true, but I wouldn't know as far as on such accounts if we have actually had real dogfights with them.
Well, am I the only one that thinks this is a bad idea? I mean, come on. If they can travel interstellar distances and their technology is perhaps millions of years ahead of us, is this a real good idea to start blowing them out of the sky? And number two, how can we? Well, I mean, we're talking about some of these reports were in the 1950s and that they were, I don't know if they were successful shooting them down, but they claim the Russians have a huge complex compared to our Area 51 where they stored a bunch of this stuff. And we hear a lot of rumors about the U.S. government, how they shot several of these things down or these things crash and they acquire these things. I'm just saying, I wonder if that's a great idea. It's kind of like a farmer going near a beehive and getting stung by a worker bee. Then he brings down a chainsaw and chops the tree down and burns it where the hive was. You know, I mean, I just think, I don't know. The people that run our governments, I don't trust them. They have never done very well for the average person in any circumstance I can think of. And this type of thing to me just seems like insanity. Let's jump gears and switch to a quick email we got in. I know that this has been a long-time listener to the station, and that's Pakal, and it's nice to hear from him. And Pakal would like to know, Michael, please tell us how Riley Martin and Curtis Cooperman fit into the celestial plan.
Well, both Riley and Curtis. First of all, Riley has a very bold character. I mean, it's not like he would try to be hide the fact like I did. You know, I didn't want to come forward publicly because it's, you know, ridicule. And you don't, you know, you want the message to come out when it be more acceptable. He actually was able to plow through a lot, and his character was such that was chosen for that character as kind of a predecessor of the of the message. Both Curtis and Riley had the ability to look and into what they were given and just simply be as honest and upright about it and go ahead and see where we were. And this is a very, you know, special character about him. And he, Riley, definitely is not a person of, you know, that would be someone that is trying to scientifically take a look at it, but one that would have, you know, having that real experience, be someone that would share it and break ground. And breaking ground and breaking that away has been difficult through the years. And right now, because of what he did, I'm following in his wake, actually. So both of them have served that that point, which the Celestials have known was needed, and selecting individuals that would be good in if they would, you know, volunteer for it and do that.
Well, we have a radio station has a conference line that I don't know about a bajillion people can get on at one time. Maybe it would be a lot of fun to see if Riley and Eron and Curtis Cooperman and you and I all want to get onto a show. That would be an interesting broadcast, would it not?
Perhaps, and yeah, they're going their way. Although, you know, Curtis has somewhat renewed ties with Riley. He's been visiting Riley for a while.
Well, I'm putting out the invitation worldwide. Riley, why don't you and Eron and Curtis come on? And we'll arrange a show, and Michael and I'll be here, and all five of us can get together and compare notes. I was going to mention something about Nancy Leader too. We got to get her back on. It's been a couple years, and time draws near for when she says things are going to happen. But I'm afraid when I call her, her voicemail is going to say, "I left the planet, you suckers. You're all going to die. I'm going to watch it from out here in outer space." Now, I don't know how busy she is, but she was nice and accommodating last time. On one of those shows I was mentioning, I forget, there's a bajillion of them on at this point, I got the chance to see a guest that we had had on probably 10 years ago, Robert Lear, the former orthopedic surgeon, a former Harvard-trained orthopedic surgeon that has removed 11 implants that have been microscopically shown to be unmanufacturable. I'm making up words here, but it's not of this planet. They are basically RFID chips that somehow track the people that they're put in. And it was nice to see him on television still doing that. You know, when you can hold in your hand, when you can see these things, when you know that they have these nerve cells around them that shouldn't be there in that part of the body, but they're attracted there. All these ridiculously sound scientific things you can look at, and still nobody pays any attention to this guy. None whatsoever. Well, save this us and this TV show I saw him on.
But. Well, you know, all of these shows would have no audience if people didn't start to, you know, listen to it. I mean, there's, of course, ways in which these producers realize what their following is and continue to fund these things, because apparently there's more and more people going to be turning their heads toward it and paying attention. Because right now, I think that there's a lot of evidence, more and more, taking reference to some of the sightings that are coming up, and they're just getting impacted because I was given information that prior to the Grand Awakening, which could be, I'm not saying it is, but could be 2012, December of 2012, but we don't know when it is, but we know that, I know this much, that prior to that will come an immense amount of sightings that would be indisputable, not rare, and people are attributing these to more people having cameras and more people, walking around with, their cell phone cameras are able to document. But there's other things that are happening along with them that are coming about too.
Well, Michael, I can't help feeling underserved as an American citizen, because when you look at what's out there outside of the U.S., there is a bunch of sightings going on, sometimes 30 or 40 in the sky at a single moment, documented by hundreds of people in excellent, excellent, excellent situations where it's absolutely irrefutable something really strange is going on. Yet over here in the U.S., you don't hear anything about it. You know, the governor of Arizona at the time of the Phoenix Lights sighting, remember that back then,
right,
in the early 90s? Hundreds of thousands of people live in Phoenix, looked up in the sky, and there it is. They're staring at it for a couple hours. And then a couple days later, the U.S. military says, oh, we dropped some flares. And everyone went, okay, yeah, that's what it was, because they said so. Well, recently, the governor of Arizona at the time, and his name escapes me at the moment, but he came on one of these programs I saw to clear the air. He said he wanted to set the record straight. He is no longer the governor of Arizona. He is retired. And he said, I had to get this off my shoulders. A few hours before that sighting on that evening, he and his family were at a park outside of Phoenix, and they saw the huge, massive V-shaped wing slowly glide over top of them. They all saw it, and they knew it was there. Yet he gave a press conference the next day, and where they brought out a guy in a puppet suit like an alien, and they made fun of it. And he was not allowed to reveal what he saw. He could have stood on that podium and said that then. But see, that's not the culture of American government. There's no, you're not going to go on the air and say, hey, my wife and I and kids, we all stood above this baseball park and watched this thing 3,000 feet across fly over our head. You know, that's not the mentality over here. Again, the Americans are not allowed to know because a handful of people in our government don't want us to know. And I think they realize that if the word does get out, there's going to be some really angry Americans, and I don't know. They may need their alien friends to get off the planet before the mobs get them, so to speak. Okay, that might be a bit extreme, but
yeah, well, that's pretty much the way. One of the things that we should observe, also in the present case with not knowing anything about the European freeze, is that how our propaganda machine works. You know, they can keep things from us because they want to. and let us know things because they want us to know. So they think they still have that level of control, and essentially do to many, like you say, who are focused on the method of delivery. But the power of our internet has released so many to go discover greater information and greater awareness. And that has been one of the wonderful things. But the whole idea of being able to turn the internet off just on a whim of some excuse of national security would be, you know, would be the exact time in which I believe that the wave, the UFO wave, would come about, being so powerful that it would be, even if the internet got turned off, people would realize, hey, wait, something is really going on, because it's that UFO stuff, something is really happening, because I just saw one go by, and things like that, because there is indeed an increase in the number of sightings of that, and also kind of a sealing up of information, as well as sometimes some of the news channels actually cover some stuff.
Well, the French are no longer hiding it. The Brazilians are no longer hiding it. The Russians are no longer hiding it. The Chinese are no longer hiding it. And there's a whole long list of governments that openly admit they have UFOs above their national skies, and that this is a real phenomenon. And those governments have enough trust in their people that their heads aren't going to explode. But over here in the U.S., because there's been so much deception going on, and as we know, well, I won't go much further, but, you know, again, they've screwed it up so bad over here that they're worried about what we're going to do. Could you handle it today, folks, if they came out and said, we're sorry, we've been keeping this from you since the 40s. We've actually had people on other planets. There's all kinds of aliens living here. They're walking around with you guys, and they work with us, and there it is. Would you get up and go to work tomorrow? I would. I wouldn't go running into the streets and pull my hair out. I mean, when will our U.S. government feel that we're mature enough as citizens to handle the topic? You know, cripe, we've had presidents say, I want to know, and they don't know, because there is a part of our government that operates, well, beyond our government, so to speak. There's men with dark glasses and long coats at the door here. This could be my last broadcast, but isn't that what's happened in the past to a lot of people? They show up and they say, "Don't talk about this." No one's ever said that to us here. We have not been threatened about this topic. We've been threatened about another topic, but it wasn't this. And I don't want to go into that because I have family and I can't protect them from a distance. But that's all I prefer to say about that at the moment. But I would wish somebody would come forward in our government, start letting us know. Linda Moulton Howe had a whole bunch of them come forward and give her all the information, try to help disclosure. And at the last minute, they pulled the rug out from under her. I just wish things were different, but I guess you'll have to move to China or Mexico or any of the other countries that feel their populations are mature enough to handle reality. Now, things to hope for. Well, Michael, in our closing moments, I wanted to ask a related question to Robert Lear and his ability to remove implants from people who said they were abducted. This may have absolutely no connection to that, and I'm going to admit right up front this could be a bunch of hooey, but let me just say, we've talked about this over the years. There's periods of time where I'll notice lights going off as I go by them. And we've talked about this in other programs. And it's not happening now. It hasn't happened for a year or two. But there are periods where it seems like it's, you know, the random chance that a traffic light or a street light or a lamp light will just go off as I pass, you know, that could be just coincidental. Now, Robert Lear has removed these implants from people who said they've been abducted. I have never been abducted. I have no recollection of ever being abducted by anyone. I did see that being in my parents' house when I was a child, but it didn't come near me, didn't speak to me, probably stayed about 3 feet away from me. All right. I'm going to the doctor at the end of the month for some surgery on my jaw. Completely unrelated. It's tooth problems. I'm having some implants put into my tooth. I have a piece of material that I've had since I was a child in the flesh of my jaw that moves around. I got my fingers on it right now. It's about the size of a grain of rice. And I went to a dentist who looked at it, and he could feel it. They couldn't x-ray. It wouldn't show up on x-rays, but he could feel it. And he was very peculiar. You know, he's like, what is that? I don't know. And it moves around. You can push it around. How's that possible? If it's in your bedded in your skin, how can you move it? Well, I'm going to have this guy take a look at this. That was like 15 years ago when the last dentist looked at it. I'm going to have this guy, maybe with his newer instruments, try and figure out what that is. It could just be a bone chip or some calcium deposit, for all I know. Okay, set that aside for a moment. Maybe there's other folks out there like me. Maybe it's a very common thing. But I seem to affect radio signals. I have an old-fashioned analog radio, the kind you have to turn the dial to tune in, for instance. And it's in my kitchen, which is probably 20 feet across. Depending where I stand or if I raise my arm in a certain location, I can tune in stations. I can get a better reception. Even though I'm 20 feet away from this device, I seem to affect it. Now, maybe that's just because, I don't know, however the radio waves get to the antenna, maybe that's completely normal. Today, for some reason, I couldn't tune in WCPN in Cleveland. That's about a 60-mile-away station, and in certain weather conditions, it's hard to tune in. So I go over, I'm playing with the old-fashioned, you know, aerial, the metal one that telescopes out, and I grabbed it, and instantaneously, I tuned in 101.1 FM in Akron, Ohio, some 40 miles away. Now, it's WCPN in Cleveland is 90.3 on your dial, 90.3. And by touching an aerial and holding it, I got perfect reception from channel 101.1 FM in Akron, Ohio. Now, is that just some radio lingo, you know, rational understanding for, is that normal?
Actually, it shows that perhaps there was, in order to do that, you have a way of tuning things in, and use a beat, we call it, you know, beat oscillation. It causes some in a difference. Actually, you may be emitting something that would cause the fundamental signal to be moved over to another signal because of changing the frequency of the actual signal, but creating a beat note or a mixed signal, essentially, because of the way you interacted with the primary signal being strong, and also noticing that there was some strange phenomena going on in terms of near-end propagation close by. There's all kinds of weird stuff that has happened. And in my field, I've seen a lot of weird things that don't act correctly in terms of just the ordinary theory of wave propagation. And I think that if that was the case, then you must be emitting a frequency, some frequency that would interact with the fundamental, create enough difference in between that fundamental and yourself to create that offset in frequency.
You know, we work used to have a part of the curriculum at Mount Union University, which is 500 yards over there, and all right, maybe 1,000 yards over there. So there's radio splash from 91.1 that filters in, and you know, it's common, especially with the old analog style where you had to dial the signal up. You couldn't just punch it in as digits. You'll get that splash, we used to call it, you know, where one station will bleed over into the other. And that's common, but not going from 90.3 to 100.1. That's not splash, and it's not splash from a radio station that's 45 or 50 miles away. That just seemed to me a bit screwy. And I think what was the irony of it was, there's this idiot, there's a DJ that I strongly dislike in Akron, Ohio, who is a Rush Limbaugh wannabe. And here I am trying to tune in interesting intellectual programming on CPN, and when I grab the aerial, whose voice do I hear? This guy. you know, I'd rather hear something else. But and that's how I knew exactly it was 100.1 FM in Akron, Ohio, because it was this gentleman. And it was his program. Then I let go of the antenna, and I tuned it up. I dialed it up to 100.1 FM, and he was still completing the sentence. So I'm positive this was that signal coming through at that time, and that puzzled me on the spot.
And all you did was try to adjust the antenna, the telescopic antenna.
Right, and I, you know, if I touch the radio, if I just it's on my kitchen counter, and if I lay my hand on the unit itself, it's an old boombox. This thing is probably 1982. It came out of a garage sale, but it gets these stations. If I lay my hand on the device, the signal clears up immediately. But today it didn't, and I tried the aerial in all the positions I could. But then one time I just grasped the aerial, and while I was holding the aerial, it changed to 100.1 FM, clear as a bell. I'd let go of it and go back. I'd grab it, it would go back to 100.1. And what little I know about radio, how is that possible?
Well, it is possible if there was a strong signal and you were becoming the nonlinear point that would create the mixing, some indifference. And it would shift, you would not be, as I said, looking at the fundamental, but actually creating the offset frequency that was being received. But if it was received at that frequency that you were tuned to, it would be kind of special because, you know, FM is broad, but it could have been anywhere. That happens all over the all kinds of times in which we find signals being detected or mixed. The old operators would call it a beat frequency, and it would beat that and then change it to the frequency you want in the intermediate frequency range. Things like that, you know, it's saying that there's some strange frequency around you, perhaps something that can give off, maybe it's not you, but something close by that may be interacting with you that you don't know about, and you're just noticing that when you attach yourself to something like that.
Yeah, I just grabbed the aerial just like anybody else would. You know, and I don't think, I don't have any repressed memories. I don't feel I was ever abducted. Mm-hmm. I've seen a couple of UFOs, as we've discussed over the years. I had those sightings last summer, 4th of July week. You know, all those things have happened. But anyway, I just had these. And then seeing Robert Lear on the show recently and showing the implants and showing them at electron microscope levels to say that, you know, we can't manufacture these things here on Earth, and just got me to thinking. So we're going to have to leave it there, folks. We ran a couple minutes over. I apologize. I just thought I'd ask the expert, which is Michael here. And I want to always, at the end of every broadcast, make the following statement. Michael does this program because he told the Celestials on the mothership that he would help spread the word. We are very grateful that he uses this platform to spread the word. You can also hear Michael on Hello Earth. Is it helloearth.com?
Info.
Hello Earth.info. And on a new broadcast, I think it's called broadcasturantia.com.
That's correct.
Michael does not get paid. We don't pay Michael anything. As far as I know, Michael has nothing whatsoever to sell, and Artist First is not accepting advertisers on this program. We are happy to contribute what we can. And on behalf of all the people that tune into this program, and Michael, you know it's almost over 100,000 a week, we thank you again for your time. We know it's precious, and you're spreading it out among several broadcasts. It's even more precious now, and we thank you even more than before.
Certainly welcome, and the Celestials themselves, as they have been interacting with me, I definitely consider it a credible point of information propagation.
Well, we're getting it out there, folks.
Out there.
Our archivist was on vacation for his 21st birthday last week, so we're a little behind on a couple of the archives, but he's back, so it'll only be a day or two in case. I think one of our other Urantia shows wasn't posted timely, but that is why. Thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. Michael, stay well. We'll be back with you next week, and happy Valentine's Day. If you forgot, well, by now it's probably too late anyway. Just listen to another broadcast, your answer show. You can listen to them all. They are free. Michael, stay safe, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, aloha.